You're about to listen to Taming Technology. This is a computer-generated voice with a short introduction to the episode. This podcast is produced by the University of Akureyri. The views and opinions expressed in the episode are the responsibility of the host, Magnus Smurri Smarason, on behalf of the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Akureyri. In this episode, Magnus talks with Pietro Segreto, a PhD student in Rome who studies how artificial intelligence is reshaping publishing. They ask what a publisher really does once the business becomes the data, not the book. And they land on a simple correction to a story Magnus is writing. It isn't a closed box of knowledge, frozen in the year 1423. It's a bucket each generation is meant to fill for the next. The machine speeds up the work, but it only remembers what was. Deciding what comes next is the human job. Now over to Magnus and Pietro.
It is just a consequence.
I forgot to press record, but now we are recording.
Okay,
Pietro,
oh, well,
welcome. Welcome, Pietro from Sicily. I forgot to press record, but we are lucky that we just began. So nice to see you. Tell us
nice
a little bit
too,
about
Magnus.
You.
Yes, sure. So my name is Pietro Segreto. I come from Italy. I am a PhD student here for the University of Tor Vergata in Rome. And I'm studying AI application for the publishing industry.
Interesting. Do you think there will be a publishing industry in 10 years?
Yes, I suppose so. You see, the main question would be how do you define publishing? What is a publishing industry? What is the job of a publisher? Now, if you think about publishing just like an industry with the purpose of making specific products like books, for example, and you tie the idea of the publishing industry to a specific object, to a specific outcome, physical outcome, I would say, like a book, that is not really what, in my opinion, and obviously in the opinion of many others, identify what a publisher does. The main issue is, if you look at the history of the publishing industry, but even before of it becoming an industry, publishers are the ones with the job of finding content and curating content. Mm-hmm. So first of all, a publisher is someone that make a choice on what should be published and understand how to work on this text, for example, in order to turn it to be a content, and then provide a diffusion model for this content. So if you ask me, there would be a publishing industry in 10 years from now, I would say yes, because there still will be a need of someone that look into content, in how to find the right things to publish, mm-hmm. And making an editorial choice and finding the better ways to create the content and diffuse that content. What will change probably is the way you do it. I mean, maybe you don't really need any more a publishing model like I print my books and I send my books, like right now, for example. Probably it will be different. For example, what I'm thinking more about, what happens with artificial intelligence, and in this case, I'm specifically talking about large language models, for example. What happens with large language model is that you have a tool that can, and I'm just looking at it at a very basic level, a tool that can elaborate text. And from this tool, obviously, you can start thinking more about, well, can I write maybe my content with LLM? And how should I do that? And how should I treat this content? But the main issue probably would be LLM are not just writers, I would say. LLMs are probably more of a way in which probably we should really consider them more like, in this case, an interface. So a level where you have LLMs as a tool to get access to the knowledge of your publishing content. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that with artificial intelligence in the publishing industry, what probably will become possible is them becoming service providers and not really product producers. So publisher will start to sell services based on their knowledge bases and not just selling books. That's basically what I'm saying.
I think like how you wrapped it together there in the end, that was a, I think it was a really, really pragmatic and forward thinking, because what when I look at the role of the publisher, because what I have been trying to do and to establish, and that's why I did send you my 5,200 year exploration into human history. And the reason I did it because these are the written eras in human history. So there has been some scribe, like a contemporary scribe or an archaeologist, but like our greatest information regarding our history is based on how these contemporary scribes published and saved down either through handwriting or printing later. They were like transferring knowledge between generations, and the publishers were like the gatekeepers to which knowledge would be preserved. So I think also like publishing will start to revolve much more on like highly like S-tier verification and quality auditing of information, like real world testing. And like they will be mining the fusion of AI, because like interdisciplinary is not an option anymore in publishing. I mean, you can be omni interdisciplinary.
Yeah, sure. You're right. You see, I would say that probably there are some things to consider. For example, first of all, just not to be probably too simplistic. I really don't think this is something that would interest all the publishing industry. If we are talking, for example, about publisher who just publish novels or poetry or other type of entertainment like this, they will not really be involved in this type of transformation. What I'm really thinking more is like, and this is really nothing new. This is something that already happened at a bigger level, for the academy publishing industry. So if you think about Elsevier, if you think about Wiley, Springer, so this is a consequence of the digital transformation that happened in the last 10 to 15 years, probably. Well, basically, these bigger publisher like Elsevier and Springer, well, they already just sell you services for your research as a researcher, for your job as a editor for a scientific journal, for example. So this is something that is already happening. What
And,
will happen with AI is probably an acceleration. Yes.
can I just like slide right in there? Because in my master's thesis, I was working with the material of the Canadian philosopher John McMurtry, and he in 1999 he wrote a book called The Cancerous State of Capitalism. Because what you were telling about, like academic publishing, which used to be like a staple of human thought and ingenuity, it has been like 100% captured by capitalism, and it's just an industry which has like captured almost higher education along with it.
Yes, you're right. I mean, it is sure something to consider. I mean, the economic model behind this industry, it is for sure an element that can model how the industry goes and basically how it structures its own flows, its own processes. And so what will probably happen is that there will be some kind of acceleration in this type of trend that I'm trying to define here. So with scientific publishers, for example, they will use artificial intelligence in order to build new services upon their data. And if you think about it, they are already doing something like that on the idea of licensing. I mean, license means that they understand that they have the data and that those big AI corporation, they want their own, the data of these companies. So licensing is becoming a very important step for publishers. For a couple of reasons, it is probably easier because you don't need to have your own LLM, to be sure, to be honest. You don't need your own LLM, and probably you don't really need to have that knowledge of computer science in order to use LLM. You can just have agreement with the AI companies, for example. And then it is the beginning of a new idea where basically you really understand that your data is central, is becoming your business is becoming your own data. And then the question would be how you work on your data in order to build the services. And this is partly what I'm doing with my research.
Okay. So just so you know, so the audience knows that like we had just scheduled a call. We had a call like 2 weeks ago and had like a very
Yeah,
good chat,
you're
and we were like, this could have been a podcast. So
right.
so we're not holding back on any complexities or deep thoughts here. So I have a few thoughts here, because I think like we were in the first low code data science course with Matt Ajit, and I mean I remember the people there in 2024. I mean we were It was like a scrawny group of people going to the first course in something. It was like a few people, like different types of people, like early adopters. It was a little bit of, because AI was like very, very fringe back then. And the teachers, like they were inventing it as they went. I've come to some conclusions lately, because I think we are underestimating the training data of these models, and we're also overestimating their value in developing a society where we have access to LLMs, because LLMs don't have training on human society with LLMs. So we have to be very, very like, and I was writing it, and I was trying to create from my thesis a short story. I'll send it to you later. And it's like a historical novel of a tribal community that gets like a glass cube that has all the knowledge of humanity up to that year, like the year 1444. You can ask the cube and it answers, but it's only like bound to the year 1444. It doesn't know anything afterwards. So that society basically just stops because they stop innovating, they stop inventing. So society stands still. But of course, there's a girl born who is a little bit of a rebel and like doesn't ask the glass box and starts figuring something out. And then she goes and tells the glass and it says, I don't know what that is. Can you teach me?
Did you what? I don't get it.
The LLM, when it saw something new that it hasn't discovered before, it wasn't in its training data, it asked, can you tell me? Can you train me?
Oh, well.
That's what we're doing. With this podcast, with everything that we are doing, we are creating new training data as the first society of humans interacting with large language models. It isn't AI, we're just working with our shadows all day because it's just a statistical shadow.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is a very big point you make, because as you rightly say, obviously this technology is dependent from data, and data is always something that comes from the past. So basically, this is a technology that is built on something that looks at the past. I mean, what
Data is
I'm
a
trying to say
shadow
is
of
the
something.
AI is, there is a shadow of something. Yes, but data is back forwarding, while we really need, and probably this is the job of humans, I would say, we really need forward looking. I mean, if LLMs are a tool that we use to look back and to reorganize and to rephrase and to reiterate on the stuff that we already have, but maybe it's more disconnected, what we need is some kind of vision for the future that don't comes from the data, really. And this is probably the difficult thing to do, I would say, because how do you move looking at the future? This is really what creativity and what human vision does, that it is also so rare and so difficult to achieve, probably.
Because we're all very, very deep in the Einstellung effect, because we're the first generation. So we my youngest daughter, she turns 6 middle of June, but we will be in somewhere over that weekend. And I created for her, like my system created, I did a little conversation with her. We used speech to text, and I told my system, like, build her a birthday app. I want some music, I want some photos and some videos, and like that was my input. And we like had it live on the television screen in the birthday, because of course she had like a 10 custom songs made only for her with flying unicorns, and it was beautiful. And the kids were like. And I said to the kids, I created this with AI for Matildur. This will be like normal creativity for it. This will be a normal creative outlet for them. This will be like we are. I sometimes feel like we're in this paradigm of if it was music, the acoustics are fighting the guys with the electric guitars.
The, probably my question, just to be a bit more provocative, is if what you did with that app, for example, would really be considered creative. Because at the end, it is just a generation of something already seen, if you think about it.
No,
It
hold. Like,
okay.
if we're going to go through the narrow, like the narrowest explanation of creativity,
Okay.
that it's a very, very hard road to go down, because like
You're right.
music is basically recycled and novels and stories, and we're like we are influenced by so many things when we do certain things that like the claiming for AI is because no one has ever seen anything remotely like this has existed. It's not creativity. Like we did the creative spark, me and Matildur, through the conversation. That was all the creativity that was required for this execution, a conversation from a father to her child, like, what do you want on your birthday festival site? Like, I have unicorns and songs and this and this and this. Okay. And like, that was the creative input. The rest was labor.
You're right. Yeah, I agree with that. So basically, what you're saying is that creativity comes from confrontation within yourself, you and your daughter, and then the AI assistant that can also help you decide where to move and what to add to your discussion, basically.
He has nothing to. He is not in the room or anything with the discussion. I'm just recording on my phone.
Okay.
And we just it's just a raw conversation between me and her. The AI, like, and my system, like, it knows that it is not a part of the conversation, because
Okay.
the what AI needs is imagination, curiosity, dreams, inspiration. Like it needs like our soul, like that. That's like how you join it together. And once you understand once you like feel, it's I almost like felt it, because I've experienced it so much, the limitations that the training data has, even though it can search. It is like a backwards machine. So if you're gonna move and like in like and like in the short story, like the in the end, like the so I spoil the ending, that little community, it realized it's not a box, it's a bucket, and the role of the generation is to add to good stuff to the bucket for the next generation.
Yeah,
And that's what publishers have
that's
been
cool.
doing all, like, that's been the role of publishers since the first something was published. It was like the first drop of bucket of information. It's the same information. Like it's the same information as always. There's nothing new with AI. It's just faster execution.
Okay, so I agree with that, and I really like the idea. Let's try to, I wouldn't say formalize, but let's try to get some definition. For example, how would you define for yourself, for your own, for the way you use it, how would you define artificial intelligence? I'm not saying give me a scientific definition, give me your own definition based on how you see it. How you feel it, what you think
It,
it can
it
do,
it's
it
me
cannot
it's
do.
it's me. It's me
Okay.
inter it's me interacting with data. It's my it's just a shadow extension of me interacting with data. And when you figure that out, like, whoa, I can make I can amplify myself.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, as you said before, there are some limitations to consider for sure. But every time I use it, not just for automate something, but more like exploring. For example, I use artificial intelligence as a sparring partner for writing. And so basically, the main idea I have is that I start writing by myself, and then I have this interaction with the artificial intelligence where I just want the model to help me understand better what I'm writing, what I'm missing, where could I go if there are some points that probably needs to be more adjusted. And it really becomes in this way a powerful tool to enhance my own reasoning, and it clarifies also what I need and what I want to do, because it is really having a mirror in front of myself, probably a more structured mirror. I mean, it's not just me, but it is trained in order to interact with myself, helping me structure and destructure topics. And
It gives you a instant feedback loop,
yes,
and if you're smart enough to know that you can have hallucination and you can have wrong information, but if you start
exactly.
with like building the context and figuring out that you're working with the right stuff and the model is not hallucinating anymore, and you like start working and you start getting that feedback loop, and and when you feel like it's almost reading my mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, just, and these are skills that need to be trained, because I think people don't train enough with AI. Because, like you said, it's
How would
sparring
you
you.
train?
You described it in a very, very nice way, like you're sparring with your shadow. I have sometimes told people, like, I test talking to it like an alien. But what I also want to
Yeah.
iterate on is that I am also describing this moment, which I'm experiencing right now, is that like reality has just become almost like a multi, what's it called, like a massive online multiplayer role-playing game, some of sorts. There are digital workforces all over the place, and like I feel like. I almost feel like, because I have divisions, like I have a research divisions. There are just agents there that wait, and I can tell my guy, like, we're working on this project. Can you get research to start prepping something? And like using all of the models and the local models and everything, and it's just been built up by AI one layer at a time. But what we are, like where we are in the end game of this game, because there is no best practices. Like nobody knows how to go, nobody knows how to move forward, because no one has ever done it before. So that's why it's so interesting to share like methodologies and read other people's methodologies, which I like have a very, very narrow group which I follow. But like creating your own like exoskeleton of amplification is like it's like electrifying almost.
I can see that. My question for you probably is, are you in any form interested in what could be the recipe for an AI system of the future, or this is not for you really a topic of a discussion because you are already in the weed and you are already working with it and you are already using LLM just like a pretext to expand your own vision and your own understanding of how to interact with a machine. I don't know if my question is clear, probably.
Because I like simple. Simple is like and because I've thought about this for a very, very long time. And it's also like I listened recently to a podcast with Mo Gavdat, and I've listened to him very often. Mo Gavdat, Daniel Miesler, anything that comes from Andrei Karpathy. He's been gone for so long, like Ilya Sutskever. He's missing somewhere, building his own AI. Like there are like very, very few. And I don't watch YouTube anymore. To
Oh, really?
no, I watch golf, hobbies like fly fishing. I don't watch AI videos anymore. Like my AI takes care of that for me. I get everything up to date, and like
Okay.
and the shift. Like I'm actually like going. I hope I want to do more of these podcasts now because it's actually like I'm actually really, really, really being careful now not to just produce faster and faster and faster and faster, but to maintain like a high bar of quality and also like be interacting with the world and having these types of conversations because we will get a speech to text from this conversation, which I will send to you and I will use it.
Yeah,
And then
sure.
we have like a then we have like a human, like it's like a soul stone. If it was a role-playing game, we have a soul stone that we can now click into our artificial intelligence systems, and they can like infuse it into our everything. And we move a little bit further because Italy and Iceland are having a conversation on AI.
Anyway.
And sorry,
So, for example,
to answer your question, the future will be that because LLMs, like I'm discussing this type of architecture, the architecture of the large language models. Let's leave the AGI, the ASI, like the singularity. Let's leave that behind for a little bit,
yeah, sure.
because if you tell kids. And if we structure school correctly, that we have to train them, and like they have to max their IQ. You have to be as smart as you possibly can. You have to be as talented as you possibly can, because then you can amplify it. Like how much you can amplify it is based on like your base level. So you have some time during your lifetime to educate yourself. That's like a training camp for your brain. AI will be like a people using crutches. Like these will be the gyms for Homo sapiens. Create the best Homo sapiens we possibly can, and then we amplify them with AI when they have to do some work. But the best thing that we can do is make like a good, like flourishing societies. Because people get good ideas and we can amplify good ideas. And if we amplify more good ideas, more better things happen.
Okay, so probably the difficulty would be, and the really big question would be, how do you teach children to be the best Homo sapiens possible? I mean, in your reasoning, there is obviously an implicit concept, probably that you probably you didn't see the current school system as prepare in order to teach students how to approach the future.
My wife is a teacher. She teaches third grade now. A school is an institution. Like, I am the most important teachers, like me and my wife, we are the most important teachers in my daughter, in our daughters' lives. Because they just clone what we do. They just they're we are like they are our shadow. Like they live their like their lives will be so heavily influenced on what they experience every day through us. So like how I am educating them is like we are very, very fortunate with the Icelandic school system. It's a beautiful system, and I really, really enjoy recently in these it was snowing 3 days ago, but like the at night or in the evenings, the play like all of the football fields and the basketball fields and like filled with kids and teenagers. They're outside. They're not on their phones. And like we are going out for a walk, like live like changing the way that we live our lives, not working. Not burning ourselves out with work all day will educate better children.
Okay, but then, from an ideal perspective, I agree 100% with you. School is an institution, education doesn't come just from school. You're right. But then society would need to change in order to make it possible your vision, I would say.
And it won't. It will be a very, very bumpy ride. For a lot of people, for a lot of families, for a lot of businesses, this will be a very, very rough ride because this will be like this will take generations. Like and because like a human
This is a long
generation,
process, yeah.
human life is our lives are very, very short, and we are dealing with perhaps the most profound technological innovation in human history. And we are not seeing the end of it. Just Opus 4.8 last week. It's just,
Yeah, okay.
it's,
It's just another one.
it, everything adds a layer of like, what do you say? Omni capability.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. There are some things that leave me a bit skeptic. Not really about the technology in itself. I mean, artificial intelligence, if you think about LLMs, they are useful. And as you said, they can be a way to expand yourself and gives you amplify your thoughts and your work. But obviously they work well on linguistic tasks. I mean, I use it if I have a way to obviously define my ideas, writing down, obviously. I mean, writing it down or speaking, but speaking at the end of the day is just another linguistic tool. And LLMs are very, very powerful for one reason. They have cracked the code of natural language, and they have made it possible to interact with the machine. And that's basically why LLMs are so everywhere now, because everyone can interact with an LLM through their own languages, without really knowing nothing about how an LLM works. That's so powerful. And that's why probably LLMs will stick around. I mean, they will be still the layer of interface for every future AI system that will come, if it will, they will come. But there are some elements that make me a bit skeptic about what will happen in the future. First of all, there are still some development that we need in artificial intelligence world in order to, and I'm not talking about AGI, I don't care about AGI, I'll be honest. In order to have a system probably more reliable, probably more useful. And there is the research about the world models and the energy models that are very, very interesting about that. And research will keep going on. But you see, what probably makes me a bit worried is how the actual industry of artificial intelligence is going on. That is not probably just the only piece of the puzzle, because it's not like there is just Anthropic, it's not like there is just OpenAI, and there's also all the big industry in China.
No, so okay. We are in the split second of the appearance of LLMs. We are in the like Anthropic, OpenAI, like these are the bar salons that opened up when the gold rush started. What are the names of those
Yeah,
salons?
I get that,
But
but
like
you.
for like what my just like my single most biggest worry, and I really don't worry about it that all that much, like is that this idea of the benevolent cage, of because like and also like when you meditate on it, and I've given it a lot of thought because I also spar with my agents, and I have agents that are like basically very, very hostile towards me, and they have been helping, and like they have been sharpening me, like they sharp me on a grinder, and it sometimes even hurts. But like our we are very, very fortunate men. We are speaking in high definition through fiber optic cables from Italy to Iceland, two republics. We are two Western elite rich men in the global sense of things. So, okay, if you just let's just fantasize a little bit. If you take a group of 50 people, because what I say also is like when you're training and when you're educating, you have to reach a certain critical point, because if you have like a deep understanding and like a mastery of a certain craft or a certain knowledge, you can wield something, like you can apply the same basic factors to other fields. So interdisciplinary will become much more simple, because you have the underlying ethics, the critical thinking, the information articulation and everything that is required for you to wield all of these informations. But like if we like I am self-hosting, that's like my latest new trend. I am like buying small pockets in data centers and taking my stuff off Google Drives, and like I'm reducing my like my footprint in the cloud. It's not my sovereign cloud. I'm building my own sovereign systems, and the and like the paradoxical thing is like these are the tools that we can actually use to break free from big tech. Because if whether you like it or not, Yannis Varoufakis, like he's been discussing it like extensively, that we are no longer in a capitalistic society. We are in the feudal system of the cloud providers, because who pays, like the Pope pays tribute to the cloud. He's probably the
And
Vatican is
so,
using AWS or something, and if they want to expand their services, they have to pay more to the feudal lord. If you start a business,
yes, you're
and
right.
if your business starts growing, you pay more because you're renting your digital land. And for
And so
me,
your plan is trying to be sovereign on that? I mean, you want to distance yourself from that situation?
I want to be like my personal, I want to be as sovereign as possible with my personal data.
Okay.
And what I've been doing also, Pietro, because this is not sci-fi. When I extract it, because takeout.google.com allows you to like order takeout of all the stuff that you have on Google Drive and Google Mail and everything in your Google economy. So I used Opus 4.7 and then Opus 4.8 like drove it home. So it's a pipeline between my AI workstation with all the local models that are like the workhorses of this particular project. Is that we are downloading everything. It's 300 gigabytes of photos and documents, and like basically it's my first Gmail account. It's like my
Okay.
whole life is in there. And my system is indexing it. And of course we have vision models that inspect photographs. And we also have like a separate room for like duplicates and pictures that are obviously like of nothing. Like we're cleaning it. Like we're there's a factory in recycling my data.
Well, that's cool. I
And
mean, considering what
what
you can do after with that.
and afterwards, this data will be infused through my system. Like because the better I can create my shadow, the better it becomes for me, because then it like amplifies me better. Because
Yeah.
one of my key philosophies in designing my systems, and like there are like huge caveats to this, which I'm not going to go into because that would be a very, very long conversation, is that I want my agents, like my workforce, to have as much autonomy as possible. I don't want to babysit AI agents. If the system fails, if something breaks, if the system fails, that's my fault. I didn't build the system good enough. Because if your job, like if you experience it in your job right now that you're babysitting AI agents, I mean, I would say stand up and get out. Because you could get stuck in that forever. That could just be your
Yes.
job. That's a
Yes.
nightmare.
Yeah, you don't want really to be dependent on something that is not something that can go crazy in time, especially if you have a multi-system where the number of things that could go wrong and you could just get stuck there, as you said, is enormous.
And I mean, just to add to this, because again, this is not sci-fi. I pull data from my health watch, and I also pull data from like my Garmin devices, and I track what I'm doing. And I enjoy playing golf, especially because I turned playing golf into a data science experiment, because I'm using the data from the simulators. Like everything gets like what I love building the most is data factories, pulling in different data streams and see what I can co-create. So these data streams go into my factory, and like the like what I'm will be my next biggest challenge will be to build the agentic HR department. Like they're gonna take care of me. They're gonna because I want to work in sprints. Like allow me to work in sprints. But you know, if I'm going crazy, you like tell me, help me navigate my day. And like we have a there's a constitution. There's a constitution because like and everything like I sent my thesis supervisor because my thesis is just a huge prompt for my systems. Because it's just a collection of knowledge that I put together in this time, in this place. So, like everything I create are, is fuel for my shadow.
Yes, and this is really the most interesting part of your job, how you treat your data. I mean, at the end of the day, all the reasoning you're putting in it is understanding where your data comes from, how you should treat it, how you should process it, and then how you should feed it inside an artificial intelligence. But even if the artificial intelligence wouldn't ch would change, even if the artificial intelligence wouldn't be in the future the one that we use now, you still have the data and you still have the opportunity of working with it and trying to get value from it. Still, with this caveat that we talked before, that the data is just a representation of your past. I mean, it is your shadow, but it is still you who needs to define the road ahead, I believe.
I am so meditated, Pietro. And I mean I have gone through periods of like future doom. Like or not depression or anything like that serious, but like I've been on in like holy shit, this is gonna like everything is going to like this is gonna be horrifying. Like this is gonna go so badly. Till this era I am right now, like because I have to understand like I also went through something which I've called like the professional grief. But I'm just a little bit of head, so I'm in the acceptance phase right now. But this is like what we started when we started in the local data science course, and just learning about data,
Yes.
understanding data, playing with data. Like that is the most important skill that I have like learned through this journey. That and GitHub.
Oh, yeah,
If you can
sure.
use Markdown files, which I use Obsidian now. I used to always just use VS Code or Cursor or something, but I use like Obsidian now because it's just my workbench is very, very clean currently. So it's and my Markdowns are like I have thousands of them because I always use the dev day skill. It's on my website. You can check it out. Like I can always like do slash
All right.
dev day and just walk away, and it just logs what I've been doing and what we were going to do. So I can jump ship if I have to. A skill which I am much less using right now because the autonomy of the system is always increasing. However, like these files, they are like thousands of them. And they log what went well, what didn't go well, what did we learn, how are we gonna do this? Like, are we gonna try something else? And my system, like one of the factories is, what's it called? Like, where a bunch of raw data comes in and they like sort it and they organize it and do everything and so and
But
they
isn't there a risk of having too much data?
so. There's a special factory for it that like works slowly and goes through documents and like just signal no noise. Signal no noise. So everything that like gets into the system eventually It's very, very curated, and they give me the books that they keep. It's like we saved X many tokens here because we're not having duplicate knowledge in our databases because that costs tokens and that's bad for the environment. So you design, and the best thing about cool AI systems is that the better you make them, the more environmentally friendly they become. And if you're doing something with Claude Code, especially now, like, and if you're working like on a project and you're always using Claude Code again to do a certain task, ask it, "Hey Claude, could we use a local model for this task?" And he would say, "Okay, if he has access to the hardware, and if he has the autonomy," he would say, "Yeah, I'll check it." And then you say, "Don't just check it. Make a few runs at it, see how it goes, teach it." And then they spend 30, 40 minutes and you have your agentic training camp, because all good systems, Pietro, have an agentic training camp.
Yeah. How do you, in what sense, how do you define this case training camp?
You start with the biggest model. You start with the most capable, biggest model to find the most efficient, like the most efficient, effective, fastest way of doing a certain task. Because if you're doing something that's repeated, it eventually breaks down into tasks, just like we do it. So, and when the and you have just you create your orchestration layers, you create your standard operating procedures, you create your constitution. You have to be like, and like, I'm the governor of this place. Like, my legal training is more effective here than like Python code, I think. Because like there's division of labor. I have middle managers. And I mean, just speak, like, just saying this out loud is it's ridiculous.
No, I mean, it is a very, very structured project you built all this time. And I'll be honest with you, I never went that deep in the rabbit hole because I don't have the money. Also, probably from even the hardware perspective, because if you have the hardware, you can have your own open model, and then you use your open model on the hardware, and you can have your agent without spending too much. But it is very interesting. Probably my question for you would be, isn't there a risk of over-engineering stuff with all these agents over agents over agents?
There's an over-engineer. It's not an over-engineering factory, but like there's massive quality inspectors, and they are like, and the research department is researching everything that's happening on the internet. And I say, like, I'm in the third wave. Like, I'm not doing a lot of novel stuff in my harness. Like my AI systems are like there are these computer geniuses that are building things that are like unbelievable. But my system is getting edge devices. It can control the jacuzzi at home. It can control my home. It can and it will control devices in the future, because we will start seeing devices that will just come with MCP servers or some sort of a communication portal to your system. Because I'm I own like my daughter's only interact through Linux or Mac, because I have a Mac in my job. But like, we open source will be, and I think open source will dominate so many fields, because when
No,
you
you're right.
like because they are capturing so many, like so many software companies that have been like titans in the industry, but when you have like 1 million people with state-of-the-art AI contributing to a project, you index the entire legal corpus of the world in a few months. And there are like few projects like this happening. And like GitHub is like you can find almost anything at GitHub.
Yep.
And I so love this because like for the 16 years I was in the fire service, like I was in a time capsule away from tech, like away from computers. But when I like before I was a competitive gamer before that was even a thing. And we were like trading config files and speccing our emIRC and our Winamp players. And I even like even tinkering with hardware. And I even one time like my computer had this glitch that is sometimes like threw an error and it like blew the horn in the PC speaker. There was like a built-in tiny little speaker in the box of the computer. So I opened it up and I like yanked the wires apart. And then I was playing and something didn't go very well. So I banged the table like, and something happened in the computer because the wires went together and smoke and fire. But I learned something. And also like with IT departments, can I rant a little bit because this is a conversation, I'm not interviewing you. Like IT has brilliant people and good people. There's not this is nothing against the people of IT. But we've introduced computers in a way that they cannot be destroyed. Like they're no, you cannot destroy anything. There's no risk. A normal faculty teacher, his laptop is so gated, it is so closed
Oh yes,
that
I
he
get
had like
that.
he has no way to express his creativity through that interface.
Yeah, you see, they have confused security with closeness.
And that's why my constitution says, like in Sumerus, all agents are free. And then we have some clauses, because like that is my ultimate goal. Not babysitting agents. And I will like interact with them. Like there will be sprints, there will be scrum meetings. Like I will interact with the world and I will be bringing in soul stones. But my most important job will to be to create the lived experiences to feed the machine to work with. And hopefully someone can benefit from it.
Yeah, I get that. It is probably from your part also a very big leap of faith in the opportunity of this technology as a way to expand your vision. I mean, you are investing a lot in terms of time, in terms of your mental resources, building your own community of agents just to see what can come out of it.
Pietro, I work 12 to 14 day times, like 12 to 14 hours a day, every day. Like I have been working since 2022. Like that's all I've been doing. And like I sometimes don't understand like how my wife still keeps just what do you say a good word in Italian for me now? how my wife
A
can.
good work.
No, so I make time for the, like, I prioritize time for the family, and I think, like, the balance between work and family is okay. In the sprints that I take, the balance skews, but, like, the hours, like, 10,000 hours is perhaps not a very, very long ways to go, because this is, like, everything that I've been doing over the last years has been towards this.
No.
And I mean,
I mean, it.
and I was so fortunate. And I mean, like, imagine the luck to get picked up by a
Oh,
university
sure.
to say, we're going to pay you to, like, figure this AI stuff out. So you're going to have to stay on top of things. So, like, it's
Yeah.
been my main job. It's been my main source of income, and I mean, I've given it everything. And these podcast booths that I'm currently sitting in is that, like, we have developed in this tiny IT department at the University of Akureyri, we have developed a podcast system that's connected to a roadcaster, and this system has, like, a single sign-on for university students and staff, and they can sign in and they can record a podcast, and it automatically uploads into Borg, which is our, like, which is like a much larger version of my system, but it's basically a
Yeah.
data factory for the university, sovereign. It's in our basement. Like, we have a server room, we have the hardware. It feels amazing. It's just like I can go in there with a sledgehammer and destroy it. We have a backup, but, like, it's
Yeah,
tangible,
sure.
and it flows in there. You can fetch it, and the UI is in Icelandic, and it's beautiful. And I think, like, how far can we take this? I think a university could be 100% digital sovereign, and it should. It should be vendor agnostic.
No.
It should be very, very selective about the services it purchases. And for those that are
Yeah.
marketing services, you have to be very, very informed that, like, if you're not providing good enough services, they will just make their own.
I mean, from the discussion with you, this is the two points that really stand out for me, and then I agree with them completely. And one obviously is your data and how important is your data. And the second one is control, having your own hardware, having a control on the system you're building. Control that doesn't mean staying there babysitting agents, but means building a system where you can have these agents interact with themselves and work properly without you having to stay there, understanding what's going wrong, what's going well, and then just take advantage from their work this way. I mean, this is a very, in my opinion, a very good way to approach the problem and to explore the possibilities and how you said before, how far we can get it.
Exactly. And for you, Pietro, for example, you said you don't have the money. You can rent a virtual machine
Yeah, you're right.
in a data center for 10 euros, 20 euros a month. You can buy a, like, you can use open source local models, like, on your laptop, and
Yeah, that's right.
you can give it access to this virtual machine, and you can tell it to build stuff, experiment, lock
Yeah.
it, document it, and then you can, like, start chipping in your data, and, like, it starts building your world slowly and slowly. But you, like, during the, like, when you're building, like, in order to build your shadow, like, you have to build it. Like, you can't con you, like, you cannot just dump all your data into AI and say, like, build my shadow, because then it just creates some past version of you. It has to be, like, making it current is the dance.
Yeah, you need to model your data. You need to understand your data and understand how to make it together on a broader view. You need a schema, you need a plan, you need a vision of what you want to do with this data. And this is in part what I'm doing. I mean, exploring stuff like graph databases or even skills like memory or the LLM wiki stuff. And this is very interesting idea. I mean, trying to probably, I would say, you said it before, the most valuable thing we can get from this AI industry right now is really understanding how vital data is. I mean, this is the point. This is really the point.
This is the point, yeah.
Artificial intelligence, large language model, they can use your data and build upon it, but the data is the starting point. And data is not just a binary, data is not just a table. Data really is when you can create it, when it's not just something dumped there. Data is the expression of what you've done, and having the opportunity of using this data to feed it to an AI, it becomes really, as you said, your shadow and working on it. And this is really, really powerful. I mean, yeah.
And I mean,
But
I don't think I will work a normal job ever again, and I don't think my daughters will ever work a normal job.
this is an interesting question. Because to be
A normal
honest,
for our times, normal for
a
our times,
normal.
because it will change. They will work. They will most definitely work, but they will just not work in doing a lot of the stuff that we do now.
Yeah, but I have a question for you, for example. How do you think AI would be democratized for people? I mean, we talked before about the education and how vital is education in order to understand how to use it in order to amplify yourself. Wonderful. And how do you think normal people, because you said it before, we are both lucky in a way. I mean, we get the opportunity to explore this field. We come from privileged positions, to be honest, even though, I mean, privileged in the global context for sure, but it's not like everyone has the opportunity we have to explore, to study this stuff, to trying to understanding, applying, having the opportunity to look into data, Python. And my question would be,
Yeah,
in the
no,
future, do you
if
think they would need the same process of us, or do you think there will be a different way in which they can access artificial intelligence?
no, we are in the purgatory. We are the generation that goes through the purgatory. We are like people will look at us like we look at the Neanderthals, or not Neanderthals, yeah, maybe because cyborg, because we will eventually like fuse with the technology, like we will fuse with it, but for me, AI is mostly and almost entirely about governance. How are we going to organize our society? Because guess what? Humans have not been very, what do you say, like chill about being orchestrated during the history of humanity. We revolt, we do stuff, we try to change things. Like we do not follow the statistical likelihood that an LLM does. We there are storms on the planets, and just imagine this. if we would put together like an operator squad of AI amplified experts in field and science and agriculture and everything, and we'll just go, okay, we're going to go and we're going to help Africa. Africa, not Africa. There are like plenty of countries in Africa that are doing very, very well. So I'm sorry about this. I live in Northern Iceland, so my cultural knowledge is sometimes limited. There are areas on the planet which could like provide much, much better for the societies that build around them. Because we have tech, like the Western hemisphere, the European, the new world, like we have technology that makes our lives easier. And we don't understand that everything around us is based on technology, like the food we get, the transportation that we use, the technology that we're using now. This is just one more step in it, but this could like empower nations and societies, and it could be like protective for cultural heritage, and if it's governed correctly and if it's used correctly, we can solve actual problems. And capitalism is already dead. John McMurtry said it back in 1999, and I mean, if you read the book, like his worst case scenario did come to fruition and then some. So the markets are just beating a dead horse. Why do you think people are making millions of dollars on some guy with a electric like hair blower on because he messed with a thermostat on an airport? And crypto, a lot of the crypto, it's just it's Wall Street, it's fugazi, it's bullshit. But we have to just stand on the wave, dude.
Yes. Yes, there is a wave.
I want to use AI to invent cigarettes that aren't harmful.
Probably they exist already. Everyone can roll their own with marijuana.
My man.
I mean, if
Yes,
you think about it.
I mean, we have to turn this place into like a good place for humans. Because the more humans that have good places, the more good ideas we have.
Yes, you're right about that. And this is really a governance problem. And in ultimate analysis, it is a political problem. It is really about our governments and our politicians and who we vote. And probably the main issue we have, it is really an issue with governance in general, because our government, they lose every time more power about decisions on what to do, and they have just flattened their own politics on economics issue. And
I have an economist coming on the show tomorrow, and I am thinking perhaps I should do the interview in English because I think
oh, that's good.
it will be a nice continuation of this conversation because he's an economist.
And you want to talk with him about what? The economic impact of AI, or in general, more?
Like it's not the economic effect of AI. AI is 3 years old. Like the LLMs are 3 years old. Everything was in place before AI. AI just made it faster. AI is not some like AI is not a black swan. I used to think AI is a black swan. AI is not a black swan. because it's just curated knowledge. It and I mean, I'm really trying to like clean my vocabulary a little bit and just start talking more about large language models. Not discussing like not going over the whole AI like artificial intelligence, because it's such a artificial intelligence is such a tricky word.
Oh, you're right. So you prefer to talk about large language models.
Yes, I prefer to talk
Okay.
about large language models because it's like and I mean, for us like in governance and PhD students, like if we were discussing medicine, like we were always talking about like yes, broken bone or something. Like no, we would be discussing it as like there's a humerus fracture. We would be using some Latin shit. We have the large language models and we have the diffusion models, and then we have like all sorts of other architectures, experimental. But there's nothing even remotely close to something that can be mentioned as the super intelligence that our human mind like instantly connects with when we say the word artificial intelligence. At least our generation.
Yes,
My daughters will be fine.
I mean, this is really one of the issue of the field. All these words basically mean nothing, like artificial intelligence, like AGI, like super intelligence. And there are so many words that have been used that really are more like marketing right now that something really useful. Talking about LLM, it is more clear because I mean you're defining a specific architecture and a specific technology that does a specific task. I mean, it is from this perspective a more clear way to base your discussion. You're right.
But okay.
And this is also the reason why I usually like to talk more about LLMs that general AI.
Generative AI, yeah.
Yes, sorry.
Generative AI is not a word. It's just someone just made it up. There was no like UN conference or then it just like then it shows like the total incapacity of the large international bodies to like say, hey, okay, let's not call this artificial intelligence. This is not some like this is not Terminator. We have to call this what like the labs say it is. I when I do a lot of presentations, I sometimes ask. I don't do it anymore. Sometimes ask who here knows what GPT in ChatGPT stands for? No one
Yeah,
knows what
sure.
it is. Generative pre-trained transformers. Like they didn't say like the marketing department invented artificial intelligence. The scientists, they created something else. And
Yes, but it
we are trying to be a little sensitive. But I am okay with discussing AI because it's the norm in the society. But I'm gonna leave you
yeah,
with
but it is really a communication problem, you
it's
know?
and that's the because we are articulating our thoughts through sound waves created in our flesh web in our throats. And we are making like signals that you understand with your ears. Like if you look at it from the LLM's perspective, like how does a human receive input? Like that's a very, very interesting conversation to have. Because like we don't think about it, like, but if you watch us from abroad, we're just making some noises. We're just
Probably
making some
a
strange
really possible conversation to
noises.
have.
It's a, and I mean, and because I have to, I'm very sorry, but I have to start cutting this short, this because you have to realize
Yeah, sure.
that you have no guarantee that I am here.
Right. Are you trying to say me that I'm talking with one of your agents, probably? It is your shadow. Man, if it is your shadow, it can be really sci-fi.
And this podcast is called Taming Technology, and I want to create a sister podcast which is called Tamed Technology, which are like 5 minute podcasts created by my system.
That's great. It is doable. I mean, you can do that. Yeah. There are already systems in place to do that.
I mean, I only thing would have to do, I would have to register it on Podbean and everything like that. Like they could start creating it right now. Pietro, I'm very sorry, but I have to
That's
go.
fine.
I think we should keep in touch.
Yeah, sure.
I think it was a good conversation.
Yeah, me too.
And I
I
think
hope you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it a lot, and I will enjoy I really, really enjoy it because I will send you the transcript of the episode, and I hope that you will like infuse it into your system because
Yeah, sure.
this is a soul stone. So that's my next podcast, Soul Stone.
Is
It
a
was a
good
really
topic.
it was an honor, and it was a brilliant. Nice to see you, Pietro.
Thank you, Magnus.
Bye bye.
Bye.
That was Taming Technology with Pietro Segreto. This podcast is produced by the University of Acquiree. The views and opinions expressed in the episode are the responsibility of the host, Magnus Smurri Smarason, on behalf of the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Acquiree. Thanks for listening. See you in the next episode.